Well, it's nice to be able to come together like this and to continue our discussion about angels, demons, and about Satan. Ultimately, there are a lot of things that we would like to know, but there are just a lot of things that we don't know. So we're looking at the angels, their role, and eventually we'll get to the point of talking about their condemnation, but we still need to consider some things about their role. Last week, somebody made the observation, I think maybe it was either Carol or Bill, made the observation that in the sense that angels minister to us, it could also be said that we minister to each other. And having thought about that a lot this week, I tried to understand the information, the biblical information that would help us to appreciate what that is. It is true that we serve each other. This afternoon, after we dismissed this morning, I had to go to Walgreens and pick up some medication for Kim, and I ran into Sharon. She was coming out of Walgreens, and she wanted to serve us. She said, is there anything that I can do that would help Kim get through this? And there's really not anything that we need at this point. I continue to think about that a little bit, and you know what? We need to let other people serve us when they can. We living in America, we have a tendency to think of ourselves as self-sufficient, and indeed, in many ways, we are. We really don't need somebody to do things for us. We, generally speaking, have the ability to do those things for us, for ourselves, but in a way, we're robbing other people when we don't let other people help because they want to help. We know that we are ministering to each other in the same way that angels minister to us. Now, the difference in the ministering that angels do is that they do it with power that we don't have. We have, generally speaking, the power that is necessary for us to take care of ourselves. And I want to help you. You want to help me. We don't have a power, as do angels, that goes beyond the ability that we have. So in a sense, we are like angels in that we minister to other people. And in a very real sense, we can't minister to other people in the way that angels minister to other people because we don't have the power. If I'm going to minister to Ron and Sharon, all I can do is to minister given my power, but it's the same power that they have. So there's an equality there that doesn't exist when we're talking about angels ministering to us, because they minister to us with power that we don't have. Does that help? Okay. I tell you, I've struggled with this idea for the entire week, and it didn't occur to me until Friday when we were flying back from Rhode Island that's really the only difference is the inequality of power. Now, we did talk about Hebrews, the first chapter. We talked about 1 Peter, the first chapter. We talked about Matthew 18. We talked about Psalms 34. At least we began talking about Psalms 34, the angel of the Lord, relative to us, encamps around those who fear him. He delivers them. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. And it was this passage that kind of began my thought process about the inequality of power. Because the angels encamp around us, and they are capable of delivering us. I would like to be able to deliver people from those things that terrify them, but in reality, I can't because I don't have that power. Angels, these spiritual beings that are the messengers of God that we've seen so far, who are caring for his people, have the power to deliver. They camp around us. It's not like Job's three friends. They came to Job, who is suffering, suffering an incredible agony. And when they came to Job, the first thing they did was they came in and they sat with Job. That was all that they had the ability to do. They couldn't relieve his suffering other than to scrape him with potsherds. And Job did that already. He was sitting in ashes. So maybe they brought more ashes, but they couldn't deliver him from the agony that he was feeling. Okay? And that's not to diminish what we can do for each other. You know, Kim tells me often that the thing that we need from each other is a soft shoulder to lay our head on. That helps. I'm the kind of person who looks at the situation and says, what can I do to eliminate the suffering? That's not my job. I can't eliminate the suffering. All I can do is be there. And as kind of weak as it sounds, just a hug sometimes is a very powerful thing. And I have a tendency to forget that. Yeah, Bill.
In Job's case, his three miserable friends, as miserable as they were, at least gave him a distraction from just sitting and suffering alone. Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, all four of his friends were taught a lesson by God that they needed to straighten their lives out, which was for their good, as well as Job's.
Sure. And it didn't help that his three friends kept telling Job, you know, fess up, tell us what you did. Nobody suffers this way unless they deserve it. That's not helpful. But to say that they came and sat with Job, that means a lot. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever been at the bedside of someone who's dying in the hospital. I hope that you never have to go through that. You feel powerless. And sometimes just holding somebody's hand as they have to go through that is the most powerful thing that there is. It's the most powerful thing that we can do. And that was one of the awful things about COVID. People were in the hospital. They were dying, and they had to die alone. And it just reminds me of the power that we do have. I look at it and think I'm powerless to do what angels do, and that's right. But do what you can do. And that means a lot. So, yeah. I think it's even more than providing a distraction. I think it's actually doing good. Yeah, Carol.
There was a true story that I saw, and that young man was intent on committing suicide because his life was so bad. He just couldn't relate to anybody. And he didn't want his mother to have to clean out his locker, so he cleaned everything out, and he had all of these books. And this one man, one boy who was in school with him, came over and said, "Can I help you with the books?" And talked to him all the way home, and they became best friends. And he didn't tell him for years that you saved my life, because, you know, and that power we have just to share God's love can save somebody here as well as their soul.
Yeah. I was actually involved in a situation like that. Was working at a school. The young man was going to commit suicide. Two of us went looking for him. We knew that he had gone off into the woods. We couldn't find him. But it was later that he said, "You know, the reason I didn't commit suicide was because you came and looked for me." We didn't find him, but the fact that we came and looked meant that much to him. So I know what it's like to feel powerless, and I know what it's like to wish that we had the power that angels have. We don't. So let the angels do their job and do our job. And if this discussion does anything for us, I think it's important that we realize that that's something that we need to learn. Okay. So the angels encamp around the people of God and delivers them. That's more than just giving them encouragement. That's more than just being a shoulder to cry on. It's more than holding their hand. They have the power to deliver. Any other thoughts? Any thoughts from folks on Zoom? Okay, let's look at the next passage that we have. This is 2 Peter, the second chapter, and we're going to begin at verse 9 and read down through verse 11. And again, we're talking about the role that angels play, these spiritual beings. Can I get somebody to read 2 Peter 2, 9 through 11? Let's get somebody from.
I can read that.
Okay, go ahead, Anne.
"If this is so, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from the trials and to hold the unrighteous for punishment on the day of judgment. This is especially true for those who follow the corrupt desire of the flesh and despise authority. Bold and arrogant, they are not afraid to heap abuse on celestial beings. Yet even angels, although they are strong and more powerful, do not heap abuse on such beings when bringing judgment on them from the Lord."
Can you say that in your own words?
Well, those who are ungodly, they don't care what they do. But the angels are there to help, help keep us stronger when we are being abused.
Okay. Anything else? I see it as important that the angels recognize what their role is. Their role is not to heap abuse on the abuser. Their role is to help us. And sometimes we kind of confuse that. At least I do. The angels didn't Their role was not to heap abuse upon the abuser. God knows how to preserve those people under the day of judgment. And God, deity, is the one who will give them their just deserts. The angels didn't do that. The angels are not judges. Yeah, Ted.
And there's a verse that specifically goes to that, that gives us an example of that. I don't know if you were going to it.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's in Jude. It's chapter 1 and verse 9. And it reads, "But Michael the archangel, when he disputed with the devil and argued about the body of Moses, did not dare pronounce against him an abusive judgment, but said, 'The Lord rebuke you.'" He didn't take upon his role to punish Satan. That wasn't what the Lord sent him to do. The Lord sent him to protect the body of Moses from Satan. And when they were arguing about it, he just said, the Lord rebukes you. The Lord will be the person who is going to punish you. The Lord is the one who brings wrath. It is not this angel. Michael is not the one who's supposed to deliver your judgment. I am here for a specific task and purpose. The Lord rebuke you."
Yeah. Another comment. You look deep in thought, Carol.
Well, Ted's comments made me think that it's just one of those things where the angels are deferring to the power of God. They're saying, "This power doesn't come from me. We're not here to do this. It's God's power." And that's something I don't think I ever just sort of thought on.
Yeah. Yeah. The lesson for us as parents, too, you know, we exercise some authority over our children. Just remember who exercises the ultimate authority, and we would have no authority to exercise over our children were it not given by God. So use our position to do what our position allows us to do, but don't step outside of it. Yeah, Bill.
There's probably three or more incidents in the scriptures where there has been a destroying angel that's come, and his mission was to strike down people, even Israelites. Is this a different kind of angel, or someone with a special mission, and not that all the angels have the same job?
What would you say?
Sounds
special. Okay. Any thoughts at home? Angels have a delegated authority, and that delegated authority, in my mind, relates to a specific instance or a specific set of circumstances, and God gives the angel a delegated authority. He performs his task. He doesn't keep that delegated authority. That delegated authority is for a specific instance, a specific task. So if an angel was given the delegated authority to destroy, that doesn't mean that that angel becomes the angel who always has the ability to destroy. But because it's delegated, he does it in the instance where it's delegated. Other thoughts? Anybody? Okay. Let's look at Daniel. This is a case where the power that an angel has is shown to be in a lot of ways greater than the power that we would have. Okay? They minister like we minister, but they do it with power. So let's read Daniel 6, and let's begin in verse 16. And I think we all know what Daniel's situation is. He is a Israelite who has been carried off into Babylonian captivity. He's one of the best and the brightest. He becomes one of the specially trained Israelites, but he incurs the wrath of at least some of the people in Babylon. I'm not sure that he incurs the wrath of the king, Nebuchadnezzar, but he incurs the wrath of some people, and those people then conspire together to create a situation where Nebuchadnezzar is kind of trapped, and he now has to sentence Daniel to a fate that I don't think Nebuchadnezzar wanted to sentence Daniel, but he is powerless not to do that. Okay, so let's begin in Daniel 6, verse 16. Can I get somebody to read 16 and 17?
So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve, continually rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the ring of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed.
Okay, somebody read 18 through 20.
Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?"
And get somebody to read 21 and 22.
Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty."
And 23 and 24.
The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones.
Okay. So then we're familiar with the story of Daniel in the lion's den and how Daniel is unharmed. That was because of the intervention of God's angel to do what men couldn't do. Any other comments or thoughts that you see here? Yeah, Bill.
It seems pretty obvious that Nebuchadnezzar cared a lot about Daniel. And this wasn't the only incident where something like that happened in the book of Daniel. It also shows that you don't want to cross the king because it's going to cost you.
Well, that's true. You don't want to cross the king because it'll cost you. It was the satraps that put together this conspiracy, the under rulers.
It was them that paid the price.
It was them that ultimately paid the price. But remember, it was these satraps that had so constructed the circumstances around Daniel that the king, even the king, was powerless to save Daniel from going into the lion's den because he signed the law. And the satraps knew it. And they, you know, they're waving the law in front of his face. And the king has to carry this out. Even the king found some limitations on his power to intervene. Yeah, Bill.
It may be peripheral, but it also shows the king was too dependent on his counselor's ideas and didn't think for himself.
Well, it could be. Could be. And, but the point that I want you to see is that even the king was limited in what he could do. But God's angel wasn't. Yeah, Carol.
I think that this time in history just really shows how God shows that he is with his people. The king knew from earlier circumstances and things that Daniel's God was an awesome God, and that he served him faithfully, and he knew that he was, as you say, limited, but the power of God was so shiny that it prevailed during this time period. And that's really the biggest thing about the story of Daniel, is that God is so prevalent and so honored, and in that way, so is Daniel.
Okay. Interesting that it wasn't the angel that then threw them into the conspirators into the lion's den. That was Nebuchadnezzar could do that. So Nebuchadnezzar did that, but the angel protected Daniel. Yeah.
Well, they conspired behind him, and they fooled him because of the way they set it up. Knowing that they could trap Daniel. But
sure.
By the time this all comes out, the king is no longer fooled. He's doing this. He's doing it under protest, and he's showing them, look, here is what I'm doing. I'm doing it because you're forcing me to. But he's also then imploring Daniel and Daniel's God to protect him.
Yeah.
Because he believes that Daniel's God can protect him. That's why first thing in the morning he's down there to check, and he doesn't have the door open to see. He calls out to him. He expects him to be there because Daniel's God has shown to be so great.
Yeah.
And stronger than him.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, this law cannot be changed. But it was changed.
Well, once you signed it, then no question.
And sealed it.
Yeah, it was. Once Nebuchadnezzar signed his death warrant, it couldn't be changed.
Well, a day later, it was.
Well, he did throw him into the lion's den.
He got out.
It's this is the first case of double jeopardy, I guess. You know. You can be found guilty and we can hang you, but if you survive the hanging, we're not going to hang you again. I was doing some reading about Salem witch trials. You know, they would bind people's hands and feet, throw them in the river to see if they were witches. If they didn't drown, then they burned them at the stake because that confirmed that they were witches. If they drowned, they weren't witches. That was a no-win situation. Okay. So let's look at Daniel 10. And that'll be it for tonight. And then we'll discuss a few more things about the role that angels play. But I think what we've seen consistently here is that angels have power that we don't necessarily have. Okay? Daniel 10, let's start at verse 2 and read down through chapter 11, verse 1. Somebody want to read that? That was a really long one, so I chose not to put it on the slide. Anybody at home want to read that? Go ahead, Ron. You have it?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
At that time, I, Daniel, was very sad for 3 weeks. I did not eat any fancy food. I did not eat any meat or drink any wine. I did not use any perfumed oil. I did not do any of these things for 3 weeks. On the 24th day of the first month, I was standing beside the great Tigris River. While standing there, I looked up, and I saw a man dressed in linen clothes. A belt made of fine gold was wrapped around his waist. His body was like shining yellow quartz. His face was bright like lightning, and his eyes were like fire. His arms and legs were shining like polished bronze. His voice sounded like the roar of a crowd. I, Daniel, was the only person who saw the vision. The men with me did not see it, but they were badly frightened. They were so afraid they ran away and hid. So I was left alone watching this great vision. I lost my strength. My face turned white like a dead person, and I was helpless. Then I heard the man in the vision speaking. As I listened, I fell into a deep sleep. My face was on the ground. Then a hand touched me and set me on my hands and knees. I was so afraid that I was shaking. The man in the vision said to me, Daniel, God loves you very much. Think very carefully about the words I will speak to you. Stand up because I have been sent to you. And when he said this, I stood up. I was still shaking. Then the man said to me, Daniel, do not be afraid. Some time ago, you decided to try to get understanding. You wanted to be humble before God. Since that time, God has listened to you. And I came to you because you've been praying. But the prince of Persia has been fighting against me for 21 days. Then Michael, one of the most important angels, came to help me. He came because I had been left there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to you, Daniel. I will explain to you what will happen to your people. This vision is about a time in the future. While he was speaking to me, I bowed face down. I could not speak. Then one who looked like a man touched my lips. I opened my mouth and started to speak. I said to one standing in front of me, Master, I'm upset and afraid. It is because of what I saw in the vision. I feel helpless. Master, I am Daniel, your servant. How can I talk with you? My strength is gone, and it is hard for me to breathe. The one who looked like a man touched me again, and he gave me strength. He said, Daniel, don't be afraid. God loves you very much. Peace be with you. Be strong now. Be strong. When he spoke to me, I became stronger. Then I said, Master, speak, since you have given me strength. So then he said, Daniel, do you know why I have come to you? Soon I must go back to fight against the prince of Persia. When I go, the prince of Greece will come. But before I go, I must first tell you what is written in the book of truth. No one stands with me against them except Michael. He is the angel ruling over your people. In the first year of Darius, the Mede was king. I stood up to support Michael. I supported him in his fight against the prince of Persia.
So there is a spiritual world in which these beings fight for us against other spirit beings, and God's angels are ultimately victorious. So not only do they play a role in this world, but they play a role in that world that we can't see. And I can't talk with alacrity about that world because I just don't know enough about that world. And I think that's where I'm going to leave that. In closing thoughts, we'll come back together next week and we'll continue with a little bit of extra information that I'm putting together about the role of angels that'll supplement what you have in the material that I've given you. Then Brent did a good job, I think, of staying with the biblical information, not getting caught up in speculation, even though there are some things that we would like to know.